Hey there, podcast family. T-Bone here to talk about the 3D Dentist Digital Implant Continuum. Are you ready to start placing dental implants, but feeling a bit hesitant and or overwhelmed? I know that feeling. I've been there. Let's change that together. Imagine not just learning about dental implants in a classroom, but actually performing surgeries on real patients right here in North Carolina, guided every step of the way by our expert 3D mentors. This is dental implant learning at its best, using techniques that are safe, predictable, and confidence-boosting. They're exactly what I use in my own practice, so you know they work. Our course goes beyond clinical skills. We prepare you to successfully integrate high-demand implant services into your practice, transforming your career by attracting new patients and elevating your practice. And it doesn't end with the course. Completing our program is just the beginning of a new journey. You'll be a part of a community of confident, skilled dentists with ongoing support to ensure lasting success and growth. After all, this is about mastering a skill that can transform your career, just like it did for me. So, are you ready to take your practice to the next level? Visit www.3d-dentist.com, check out our upcoming sessions, and join us to revolutionize your practice. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now let's get back to this week's episode. Welcome back to another episode of the T-Bone Speaks podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Tarun Agrawal, better known as T-Bone. And we believe on this podcast that you can earn more money, work less, take more time off, and do more of the dentistry you love by working smarter, not harder. And you'll be building a practice that is more future-proof than ever. I am all, as always, joined by my lovely co-host, Miss Meredith Cooper-Jones. That's you, Meredith. I know you're laughing. What's going on?
Well, we're just finishing up.
Why do you have to act so blonde today?
It's the hair.
It's the hair.
Well, I did my hair today.
Is that what you call it? Clipping in stuff.
Yes. So we're finishing up a great 2019.
Yeah, it's been a good 2019 for the podcast and for the Institute. Yeah.
Yeah. So everything's wrapping up there. And you just got back from a fun weekend. I guess that really wrapped up the end of 3D. We had a 3D Dentist golf tournament.
Yeah. So we did our first annual 3D Cup. It was phenomenal. I got to give an unbelievable shout out to Dr. Thad Vincent of Sumter, South Carolina. And this is a side note. Sumter, South Carolina is not a metropolis, and Thad Vincent is doing unbelievably well. He just acquired his third practice down there. There's five dentists. They're doing phenomenal dentistry. They're focused on the right things. I will always believe this. I learned this from my dad. The real riches in dentistry are in middle to small town America. Being in metro areas like Raleigh, North Carolina, more now than it used to be, metro area is more tough and tough every day. So Thad's doing unbelievable. He did a phenomenal job arranging our golf tournament for us. And we had a Ryder Cup style tournament. I'm happy to announce that Team 3D CBCT handily defeated Team 3D CAD-CAM. It wasn't even close. And I'm also happy to announce that I walked away with almost $1,000 in winnings that I shall not report to the U.S. government.
Oh, good. So you won back what you lost on the cruise.
I won back a little bit more than what I lost on the cruise. But we will be doing the 3D Cup again. This year, we limited it to 12 players. And next year we'll be expanding to 24 players so we can have a true Ryder Cup style event. We had caddies. We played three rounds of golf. We actually ended up playing four rounds of golf with caddies at a world-class golf course. We played the Ocean Course at Kiowa this year. We're working on our venue for next year, and we're going to move the dates a little bit so that it's a little bit easier to have daylight for us. So it was a phenomenal event. So what's going on in your life?
Well, that sounds good. Not much. We're just getting ready to wrap up everything. This is the first year in our new house.
How's that going?
Well, good. We had to go get a real Christmas tree. Our neighbors were just trying to keep
up. When you
say
real Christmas tree, like legit, like you cut it down?
Yeah, like you have to go to the mountains, put it in the truck, drive it back.
that sounds like way too much work. Can't you just put up a banner? Chris, you don't even have kids.
Yeah. And then, I mean, our neighbors go all out with the lights. So we have people park all on our street. You'll have to bring the kids over. Santa Claus is out there.
We have that one, one of our patients that has that real nice place.
Yeah, but this is like seven houses together.
Okay.
So it's really cool. It's fun. At first I was like, oh my gosh, we didn't know what we were getting ourselves into. So we had to put up lights because we have to, you know, fit in with the neighborhood. It looks really good though.
That's awesome.
So we're enjoying it.
Well, last week we interviewed Dr. Yvonne, the Implant Ninja. Fantastic interview. I believe you got quite a few calls about the mentoring on
that. So he asked a few times, you know, if T-Bone does any mentoring. And T-Bone's like, yeah, just call me, just email me. He won't text you back.
No, I do text people back. I won't call back. Yeah.
So I just wanted to keep everyone in mind that our Millennial Mastermind is a great place to start for a mentoring relationship with T-Bone, with Sully, people who have kind of been through that as well.
Yeah, so the Mastermind's fantastic. Right now, it's my main way of mentoring outside of being an associate at our practice. But my main way of mentoring and connecting with people is through the Millennial Mastermind. We have our kickoff in January, just next month, and we have two spots left to fill. And it is geared specifically for those dentists who are male or female, who are practice owners or like in line, already got, you know, everything's in place to become a practice owner. In other words, you can be a decision maker at your practice and you're within your first 5 years of owning that practice. And then you're millennium age-ish. So that probably means up to like 33, 34, somewhere in that ballpark is what we want. And we get together twice within a 6-7 month period, once at my place here in Raleigh in January, once at Sully's place at the Lake House in July, and we do virtual coaching and mentoring every month. And our participants for last year were very pleased. At least 95% of them were very pleased.
Oh yeah, it was fun. It was a good time. It's kind of a little working vacation for everyone too.
So you got a review for this month?
Yeah, before we get started with the amazing Rachel Wall, I do have a review. This is from the original dental assistant rock star.
Who would that be?
So we're not sure.
How are we going to send them swag back?
I like the quote, though. It says, T-Bone gives you wings. Every time you think there is no way you can incorporate something into your practice or have the time, this podcast lays it all out and gives you such confidence to just do it. Best motivator ever. Great job.
See, I'm getting a bigger and bigger head.
I like the T-Bone gives you wings.
I like that. You know, I thought it was just T-Bone makes everybody gain weight.
We do eat a lot.
So let's get to our interview with Rachel Wall. Again, we live in a review economy. Please leave us a review. Please help us spread our message of saving, or I don't want to say saving, of enhancing private practice dentistry by sharing this podcast. And I always love having a conversation with Rachel Wall of Inspired Hygiene. And for once, we don't actually talk about perio therapy.
Or
my deal about perio. We actually focus on the business and role of dental hygiene. I know you're going to love this interview. And we'll see you back next week on the T-Bone Speaks podcast. Now to our interview with Rachel Wall. Hi, I'm happy to be joined by Rachel Wall. Rachel, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. T-Bone?
You're still teal to me, so.
That's okay. Yeah. That's okay. Thank you.
Rachel is certainly an expert, well-known in, I used to say the perio world, but we should probably redefine it as the hygiene world. So Rachel was a practicing hygienist here in Raleigh, then moved to Charlotte. Mm-hmm. I was going to try to hire you, then you left. You couldn't have worked for me anyway. You wouldn't have tolerated. You wouldn't have put up with me. You know, you were too smart to put up with me.
I did leave. But driving back into Raleigh, it just brings back a lot of good memories. It's fun being here. It is beautiful. Yeah, yes, it is. I love it.
I love it. Well, Rachel, you're here speaking for ADOM, and you're doing a hygiene seminar tomorrow.
Yep, hygiene coordinator.
Hygiene coordinator. Yep, and, you know, I have my own issues with all this perio stuff.
Yes,
I don't want to hash that up again. So I saw your agenda and I said, oh my God, let's definitely talk about this. So there's a few things I want to talk about today. I want to talk about hygiene schedule engineering, the hygiene appointment flow, hygiene co-diagnosis,
and some different hygiene compensation models.
Okay.
So those are the four things I want to cover today, and let's kind of go from there and see what happens. Okay.
I'm ready.
So let's start with, you said on your brochure, you said hygiene schedule engineering. Tell me about that.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, podcast family, T-Bone here. Are you a dentist looking to elevate your practice and profits? Then pay close attention. Introducing the 3D Business Mastermind, the dental business coaching program designed for dentists who want to see real results. I've walked the path of practice ownership for nearly 25 years. I know your challenges. I felt your pain. This is your opportunity to overcome the chaos, the busyness, and the financial frustrations of owning a dental practice. Imagine a dental practice where your appointment book is highly productive, doing the dentistry you enjoy, your team is self-motivated, and your profits keep climbing. That's what the 3D Business Mastermind is all about. In this exclusive mastermind, you'll join a league of ambitious dentists driven to elevate their practices. You'll gain access to proven strategies, personalized coaching, and a community that understands your journey. So if you're ready to supercharge your dental practice and enjoy the success you deserve, visit www.3d-dentists.com and take the first step towards a brighter future in dentistry by filling out the 3D Business Mastermind application. Now, let's get to this week's episode.
So one of the things we do with our clients right off the bat is we do a virtual audit of their schedule.
Okay.
So we look to see, because if they're looking to grow, right, mm-hmm. if they're looking to do particular things or types of treatment or more new patients or things like that, and they want that to go through hygiene, they've got to have room in the schedule for that. Okay. And sometimes they don't think about that.
Right.
And sometimes the schedule can be the biggest barrier to them really implementing something, right? So let's say they have wanted to do a perio mm-hmm. program and they can't figure out why it's not getting off the ground.
The blocks for the scaling
routine. Yeah, or else the hygienist just says, you know, I can't even get this patient in for 8 weeks, so I'm just going to do the best I can today and check it next time. And then that just cycle continues for years and years. So we look at it from that aspect, mm-hmm. like, do they have room and space in the schedule?
And is it realistic to their goals? Like, for example,
exactly.
So like 2 years ago, we were averaging, say, 25 new patients a month.
Yep.
And then, we had blocks for that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But today, well, not today, but let's say a few months ago, we had those same blocks, but now we're at the 40, 42 mm-hmm. New patients per month through hygiene, I'm referring to.
Yep.
And so I was talking to my team, they're like, yeah, it's like 6 weeks, 8 weeks before we can get new patients in. I'm like, that's dumb.
Right.
You know, so that is a great, to me, that's a very specific example to that, mm-hmm. Is that, you know, if we're averaging, or if we're getting ready to do a marketing campaign, you know, we probably, and the hygiene schedule fills up 6 months in advance,
yep,
correct?
That's right.
So like we did a marketing campaign for new patients, let's say, and then so I need to have those blocks available. So that's the engineering, that's part of the engineering.
That's part of it, yeah, because otherwise you're kind of working against yourself.
Right.
If you say you have a goal of 40 new patients and you want most of them to come through hygiene, you've got 20 blocks.
Right.
It's just the math doesn't add up.
And it affects production too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely affects production, because if your schedule is just full of profi,
mm-hmm. Especially at my MetLife fees.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, a lot of dental practices are feeling that pinch.
Yeah.
And so that's the other thing we look at, is if it looks like their schedule is just full, they don't have any room to expand in the practice, and they want to do more productive services in hygiene, or they want to see more new patients in hygiene, then we have to have that conversation, say, hey, you know, can we refer you to somebody that can help you look at your plans? Maybe okay. It's time to drop something.
I got you. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're talking about dropping insurance. Okay.
Sometimes that comes up when we're doing that schedule engineering. Yeah. The other thing that we see a lot is we'll see, in fact, just recently we did a chart audit, or a scheduling audit rather, and we saw the blocks like outlined on the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a profi right in the middle of two blocks.
Right.
So the patient says, well, I really need to come at 10:30.
And so they just move it.
And they really see patients on the hour. Right. So they just put the patient at 10:30, and then they have 30 minutes at 10 o'clock.
It screws up two blocks, actually.
Right, exactly. Yeah. They have a 10 o'clock 30 minute, which, unless it's a toddler, they're probably not going to fill it, right? Because people aren't going to take their kids out of school most of the time to come to the dentist at 10 o'clock in the morning. And then where they maybe had a 90-minute new patient block, now that's gone.
Right.
So it's really directing patients, you know, the patient says, I want to come at 10:30. So we could see it not at 10 or 11, which would work better for you. So just these are simple, basic things.
Yeah, the words matter.
Yeah, the words do matter.
I want to give another example. One thing that I've been trying to coach and we've gotten pretty good at now is we were having a lot of this troubles that you were talking about in terms of people asking for like odd times.
Yeah.
Because we let them see our schedule. So they would stand up, they would look at the schedule with us. So, and that part hasn't changed, but what has changed is the blocks. Like we have physical blocks there. Mm-hmm. So they don't see that time is open and they're like, hey, I want to come at 10:45 because that totally screws up what you're talking about. For us, it was important to put those blocks in there. On a total side note, those blocks are problematic for us today because we're doing online scheduling now. Mm-hmm. And so those blocks show up as
taking up time.
Mm-hmm. So we're trying to, you know, work through some things.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you brought that up because more people are doing online scheduling. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something we need to be offering, right? Because that's the way people live today. Yeah, right.
We must be.
That's the way people are living today. So I'm glad you said that because that's something that we need to be aware of and we need to start teaching around that.
I would tell you that
handle that.
Well, number one, you call Local Med.
Yeah.
There might be some other companies out there. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But Local Med's the one we use. And I had all these preconceived notions of what online scheduling is going to be. And 80 to 90% of them are not true.
Okay.
And so we're in control of what's available. We're in control of what kind of appointments can go there. And at the end of the day, we get a notice immediately. We just pick up the phone and call them and say, hey, this was the wrong appointment. Let's move you to another time. Mm-hmm. So we've been happy with it. We've had it 2 weeks now only. Awesome. Maybe 6 months from now, I don't like it. But right now we do.
Okay.
And I think the number is 10 or 11 patients have scheduled online.
Okay.
Already.
In two weeks. Yeah, and that'll only increase because you're going to be promoting it in the office and online and everywhere. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's awesome.
So one thing I was told to look out for on when you implement online scheduling was that a lot of your recall patients won't pre-schedule. They'll start saying, I'll look online. So that's one thing that I want to keep an eye on is how many patients are we pre-booking? And then what I want the hygienist to do is pre-book them and say, now you can go online and change it, you know, as we get closer to the time. But I want them to leave with an appointment.
So here are a couple things to think about is a lot of those patients like specific times.
Mm-hmm.
So you could say, hey, look, if you want this time, you need to reserve it now.
Those patients aren't the problem.
Now.
It's the older patients that, you know.
But some of them are scheduling in the middle of the day anyway.
Right.
You want to reserve your prime time. So those people get it, and they're going to go ahead and reserve their time.
For us, prime time is 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock, and then 3:30 and onwards.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the, let's go ahead and reserve your time and then you can change it online. Is, to me, that makes me nervous because it almost makes it easy for patients to change their appointment. So is there something that...
I don't know if they can change it online.
Okay.
So I don't know if they can delete appointments. Because actually, I'm pretty sure they can't.
Reschedule appointments.
I'm pretty sure they can't delete them because it would show up as unused, as unavailable time.
Yeah. The other great thing is for those patients that have a history of short cancellations.
Oh, yeah, that's perfect.
Then you just say, you know what? Why don't you just book online?
Here's our online system.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I'm interested in seeing, we haven't had any openings in hygiene recently. I'm interested in seeing how it works for a short fill to be able to have people, you know, go out there. But anyway, I'm digressing from the schedule engineering. I have a tendency to do that.
No, that's good. This is all part of it. So reserving time for the procedures that you want to do, whether it's new patients coming into hygiene, even if the doctor wants to see new patients first, it's good to reserve the time for the patients to come back for their prophy.
Right.
Periotherapy, right? Reserving time for that. You're creating this sense of urgency and then you have nowhere to put them.
You know, the other thing that I've noticed is we have a tendency to fill what we schedule. You know, so if we create the blocks for perio, we find a way to fill it with perio.
Yeah,
if we create a block for new patients, there's a psychological effect that, oh, that time is for new patients. I need to put a new patient there. I need to suddenly, if you like, this is probably not true. If you've been averaging 10 new patients and you like want to go to 15, I'd say just put 15 blocks in and see what the hell happens. I think within a few months, you'll suddenly start having 15 without changing any of your marketing.
Yeah. And I will tell you that happens with perio. Mm-hmm. Same thing is And we tell them, we say, look, now it's treatment's not going to just automatically show up in those blocks. You've got to schedule to the blocks. But even if, and we say put blocks on the schedule, even if your schedule's pretty open.
Mm-hmm. Oh, put
them in. Because it's just training your mind like, okay, I've got to be diagnosing and presenting treatment.
Or you have to start coaching for the future.
Exactly.
Bad habits. Like, that's a problem we have. That's a big issue we had in our practice. And to a certain degree with my schedule, we still have to a certain degree where we've created a culture where patients can get seen, you know, mm-hmm. because I'm willing to work through lunch, willing mm-hmm. to stay late, willing to come in early.
So then their reservation isn't quite as special right. if they know.
Or if they call, they're like, oh, he saw me at 5 o'clock last time. I'm like, oh, well, now he has kids to, you know, mm-hmm. pick up and do
and
stuff
now.
With.
And now they kind of come. Yeah. So we do train our patients.
So hygiene schedule engineering. So yeah. One of the things I love that you're talking about, okay, and I want our listeners to hear this. We didn't once really talk about scheduling for productivity. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think there's some danger in scheduling for productivity. Okay. I prefer, I mean, it's important. Don't get me wrong. I believe that you work even more backwards from that. And you base your productivity on what types of procedures and patients right. you want to do. And then you schedule for that. So it's the same thing as scheduling.
Same thing as block scheduling.
But I think that, again, I go back to the psychology of it. I think there's such a big psychology difference when you're teaching your team to schedule for money versus scheduling for new patients, perio, the right things, right? And so it trains a culture that's not so money focused.
Yeah. It's more service focused, right? And what we teach our clients too around these blocks, because the other thing, if you have blocks in place, then you've got to come up with some kind of agreement of when are we going to release a block.
Yeah.
So it might be we're going to release it the week of. We're going to hold it for 2 days out. It kind of depends on practice. How busy you are, how many new patient calls you get in a day. Like what the, you know, do you have a long, short call list that you can mm-hmm. fill things pretty quickly? It just depends on the
practice.
So
one of the things I'm trying to implement in our office is not releasing them as early as we used to, because I want those times to be for emergency patients too. I think too often practices think of emergencies always coming in the doctor and the assistant mm-hmm. schedule. I think a hygienist can do that too. There's nothing, at the end of my hygienist, you know, pre-diagnosis on new patient visits and recalls, why is it any different for them to see the emergency? And quite frankly, it's as, at least in our fee schedules, it's as productive mm-hmm. as seeing a recall.
I liked
it. And it's
it.
Less stressful for me and my assistant.
Yep.
You know, it just mm-hmm. piles on. So like put mm-hmm. them in the hygiene schedule and, mm-hmm. you know, we'll figure it out from there.
I always liked seeing emergencies because I could make them feel comfortable. And I felt like I was addressing somebody's need pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, I can kind of think through what could be happening here, what images need to be taken, mm-hmm. you know, what questions to ask.
You can plant the seed about becoming a new patient. You can plant the seed like maybe this isn't a good patient mm-hmm. for us.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, you're the one doing those things mm-hmm. as a hygienist. So mm-hmm. those are important things. Mm-hmm. So we talked about schedule engineering.
Yep.
Okay. So there's certainly some very important points there. So let's move on to the hygiene appointment flow, okay? So I assume here you're talking about the inner workings of the actual appointment mm-hmm. itself. So mm-hmm. talk to me about that.
So we're going to assume that a lot of your listeners' hygiene appointments are 60 minutes.
That would probably be an incorrect.
Okay.
If they listen to me, that's a correct assumption.
Yep.
But I'm shocked at how many people still do 45-minute appointments. Which I think is bad.
Yeah, so here's what we're seeing is it's tough because if you have low reimbursing mm-hmm. fees, it's got to give somewhere, right? Sometimes you have to look. So hang on, let me get there because I think I know where you're going.
Yeah, you know where
I'm
going.
So the short kind of sighted look mm-hmm. at it is hygiene's got to be producing X per hour and all of that. And to do that with certain reimbursement schedules.
Which 80% of us are on PPO schedules.
Right, you have to shorten appointment times.
Right.
But what we see mm-hmm. is when appointment times are scheduled, particularly to 45 minutes or less, there are some rock star hygienists who can do a great job in 50 minutes. I'm not one of those. Like, I want to have a little bit more time because there's a lot of things that I want to discuss with the patient and educate and really build that relationship mm-hmm. and also create an easy exam for the doctor mm-hmm. so that everything's kind of teed up and ready to go. So if you look at the longer game with it, then that time is really spent on really building the doctor schedule.
Like, so scaling shouldn't increase, like scaling
right,
time.
Right, that's what we see, okay, is scaling, when, yeah, that's what we see.
The scaling time should be the same, whether it's a, let's call it 30-minute appointment to 60-minute appointment, the scaling time shouldn't change that much.
Okay, right. So we teach this concept of 20-20-20. Right. I didn't invent that, but it's something that's been tried and true. I think Vicki McManus invented that one day 20 years ago when I worked with her, so we'll give her some credit for that.
Absolutely.
So 20 minutes, first 20 minutes is that hygiene exam. Right. So they're collecting all the data, right, in your practice, right, fact-finding your practice. They're using the scanner. They're taking intro photos.
The most important time.
Most important time, hands down.
So I got invited to speak at a local hygiene school, a community college down in Sanford. So I went in there and I said, listen, they're focused on teaching you guys scaling. It's the least important part of your job. Okay.
I mean,
at the end of the day, if you can't scale teeth, you'll never get a job. You should go do something else anyway.
That should be a given.
It should be assumed that you can scale properly.
That's right.
Yeah. So if you don't mind, I want to kind of walk through. So let's back up for a second. Okay. So I want to make a clarification here. If you're trying to build a traditional general dentist practice, that's drill, fill, and bill, just very traditional, and you can make a fantastic living, stick with 45-minute visits, stick with basic technology, don't change too much, don't worry about schedule engineering, don't worry about those things, okay? If you're trying to build a more modern practice or a more recession-proof and or DSO-proof practice, which is what we espouse here on our podcast, it is unbelievably imperative for you to move to 60-minute appointments. You will see a 1 or 2 month decrease, and then it'll totally go away. It'll be increase. Mm-hmm. Now, that first 20 minutes you're talking about, we're taking intraoral pictures. Mm-hmm. Sorry, let me back up. We're taking x-rays. For us, that's a cone beam and 7 intraoral x-rays.
Okay.
We're taking digital photographs, and we're taking a digital impression of every new patient that comes into our practice. So that's the first 20-ish
And they're probably doing perio screening.
Yes, of course. The charting is there, absolutely.
Yep. Oral cancer screening, absolutely. All of that, medical history review, all those things. And all of that should be done before we ever pick up a scaler.
Right.
Because that's way more important.
Or before you tell the doctor that you're ready for an exam.
Exactly. So what we teach is, once all that is done, takes about 20 minutes or so, then you call for the doctor, because doctor can come in at any point then.
Yep, absolutely.
And then you can start scaling. Mm-hmm. And I am completely interruptible. So if I want doctor to come in during scaling time, because that means there's no wait time for the doctor exam.
Right. But you can't do the exam until you get the facts.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And as a hygienist, I don't really know what I'm going to do until I collect the facts.
Right.
Even if it's an existing patient. Things change with patients from time to time that they see you, right?
Absolutely.
So, if I have been seeing a patient for 5 years and we have a pretty good, protocol and screening and that kind of thing, chances are it's going to be whatever's on the
schedule.
It'll
be a 5-minute fact finding.
But things happen, right?
Right.
So I've got to make sure I know what I'm doing that day is correct, or what's on the schedule that I'm planning to do is correct. So then that leaves about 20 minutes for scale and polish.
Right.
And what we say is, if you are spending a lot more than 20 to 25 minutes on scale and polish, it's not a single prophy. Okay. It could be 2 prophies, right? Let's say they have a lot of stain, but they're healthy.
Right.
The patient really wants you to get every single speck of calculus off, stain, then they can come back for another prophy.
Right, absolutely.
But that's what we see when times get shortened to that 45 or 40 minutes. The exam, that fact-finding, isn't valued.
Or it's not done.
So it's not done. Yeah. It's not valued, so it's not done. And so then you're in this kind of vicious cycle of, I'm not diagnosing what really needs to be done on this patient. So a lot of times the prophies just get more and more difficult. And so the hygienists are spending a higher percentage of that appointment on scan.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, podcast family. T-Bone here, bringing you our newest live patient implant training, Full Arch Express. For dentists already placing implants and ready to level up and continue building their implant practice, this is the golden ticket. We're diving deep into Full Arch Implants, the hottest game changer in implant dentistry. In this program, we tackle both overdentures and All-on-X fixed hybrids, mastering techniques that are essential for modern, comprehensive dental care. It's about getting your hands on the tools and techniques that will replace the doubt and fear with confidence and predictability. Here's the kicker. There's live patient training right here in North Carolina. You're not just learning theories. You're in the operatory doing real work on real patient from start to finish, guided one-on-one by our expert 3D mentors. You'll learn the nuances of each approach, ensuring you can cater to a wide range of patients to maximize revenue. Speaking of revenue, with me, you know it's not just about the clinical skills. We're bringing business into this aspect too, teaching you how to integrate these advanced services profitably into your practice. So are you ready to rise up to the top in implant dentistry? Join us at the Full Arch Express. This isn't just another course, it's a career-defining leap. Head to www.3ddentist.com to enroll in our next session. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now, back to this week's episode.
Yeah, your patients don't want you to scale that long, just so you know.
They don't, but yet for some, you know, for them, it's the tangible thing that they know happens at their visit. So it's important to them. And so many times hygienists adopt that as the most important thing. Plus, like you said, I was teaching some hygienists last week about stain removal. And if you've got 96% of the stain off, don't spend another, if you've got 90% of the stain off, don't spend another 20 minutes getting the other 10%. Yeah. The patient most of the time doesn't care, or they can't see it.
Yeah, that's true.
But they're stuck in, if I were to see this patient in hygiene school, I would get a bad grade.
I would fail.
Right. So 15 years later, that's still kind of, that seed is implanted there. So it's good that you give them that. It's a completely counter, but that's what you're all about.
I would use it as a selling point to your patient. Let's say, hey, Mrs. Jones or Mr. Jones, you know, we weren't able to complete everything. We probably need to look at going to a 4-month or a 3-month recall, or we want to do a second cleaning visit.
Yeah. Or you should use a Sonicare between visits. That's going to keep the stain down or whatever.
Or whatever.
Is going to keep that stain down between those visits.
Well, maybe you should stop drinking tea and coffee. Well, my Indian patients, they stop drinking and eating all that stuff that we have in India that stains teeth. Mm-hmm. All right. So we've talked a little about the hygiene appointment. Let me ask you, I want to go back. Of your clients, what percentage or how often are you seeing digital impression systems dedicated to hygiene rooms?
Almost never. Yep.
I think we're getting close to a tipping point.
Good.
I think what's happening is, at least in our office, so our office has 2 prime scans, 2 iTeros. The 2 prime scans are dedicated to the doctors and our champions, sleep champion in our practice, and consultations.
Okay.
So that's where the 2 prime scans kind of float around. And then we have 2 iTeros that are dedicated to the hygienist and Invisalign in our case. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that by the end of 2020, I'll have 1 more of each.
Okay, great.
So that we can have every operatory with a digital impression system in there.
What's the time that it takes your hygienist to do the scan?
The digital impression, so probably somewhere in the 5 to 7 minute ballpark. Not even. Let's say 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I say 5 to 7 because that's the whole process. So for us, what we do in that 5 to 7 minutes is we take the physical digital impression, we show it to the patient, we kind of the sizzle with it. Then we click the virtual ClinCheck. And then we show them what their teeth would look like if they ever chose to look at a tooth tooth movement. Mm-hmm. And then it's also a legal record for us.
Absolutely.
Of where the patient is.
Yep.
And we've had a few patients where they say, well, my recession's not that bad. Or some of my longtime, patients that have been with me 3 or 4 years, in terms of with the digital impressions now, we can show them the after and say, hey, you are wearing that canine. Mm-hmm. And this is why you have that abfraction and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And the patients buy in more for that.
Right. And so I think we've got to move away from the manual charting of all existing and all of that. That takes probably twice as long as the scan. Yeah,
exactly. And quite frankly, you can do it after the fact. once you have pictures and or the digital impression.
If you need to, yeah. Yeah,
you know, because we're still built, like, I want to see what's in there. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think, so for my friends that are listening that are very proactive practices that are somewhat business-minded, just get a digital impression system and put them in your hygiene chairs and teach them how to use it and see what in the world happens. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you can resell it on eBay or maybe the company will take it back from you.
But the other thing it does too, and this is what I really want to get across to if there are any hygienists listening or really anybody, but it's frustrating sometimes because the hygienists are, and everybody is somewhat resistant to change, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you've gotten used to it. I've gotten used to it. Things just change.
I'm resistant to change,
but sometimes I'm still resistant to it, right? My team will tell you that, right? When they want to do something a little different, I'm like, but this has been working.
It's working. Why are we changing it, right?
So sometimes they're resistant to change. But for me, that's exciting. It's like, here, I'm investing in your ability to communicate with our patients at a completely different level. Yeah. And that's exciting. That's what keeps hygiene interesting, because otherwise it's just running through the schedule doing one prophy after another. And that can get really boring after a while.
That's why, you know, there's Facebook groups dedicated to hygienists getting out of the operatory, right?
Exactly.
And quite frankly, I think part of that is because they're bored at their job.
That's right.
And, you know, I tell, you know, part of my sell to my hygienist that when we do new things, I said, imagine this, when you leave here, you'll have a skill that'll get you a job anywhere else.
Anywhere.
You know,
and it's probably going to get, it's going to give them skills, whether they stay in the op or they decide to move out of the op.
Absolutely. And so that's about growing at the end of the day. But I'll say one thing differently than you will. I will say that I think it'll be more dentist driven to get the hygienist to do it.
Because
we can mandate it in a way. I think it's going to be hard to get the hygienist to make some of these changes.
Agree.
But if we can get the message to dentists to understand how important hygiene is for these things.
So my position on it is, when these things come into your practice, be open.
Yeah.
Because you're right, it is going to be totally dentist driven. Yeah. There's going to be a teeny, teeny, tiny percentage, just like there were with you know, with the perioscope and things like that, people that will go out and do that kind of thing on their own, people that buy their own equipment, that's still a teeny tiny percentage of hygienists. So the vast majority is dentist driven. So my point is, for hygienists, is just be open.
Yeah.
Be open, learn new things, challenge the way you've always done things. That's what keeps life interesting. Otherwise, it's just going to get boring.
Or you'll be obsolete in 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty much. So. Mm-hmm. All right, so we've talked about the hygiene appointment flow. Right, so let's back up for a second. So we talked about, in other words, scheduling properly, you know, having enough blocks for new patients, for recalls, for perio treatment that you want to do. In other words, block based on how much you want to do.
Yep.
Okay. Then we talked a little bit about what we do during the appointment. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think the key takeaway for me and for the listeners should be that the hygienists are ready for an exam. They physically tell you they're ready for exam at the 20-minute mark. So that way you have 40 minutes the dentist to not make your hygienist run behind.
Right.
Okay. And also you have 40 minutes to find the best time for you to leave your operatory to go do the all important hygiene checks.
That's right.
Now we're starting to see our hygienists being more productive. They're having better schedules. They're having more time. They're engaging with our patients a little bit more. And that'll lead us to our next topic. Mm-hmm. And that's the topic of the hygienist and the co-diagnosis. Mm-hmm. So talk to me about that.
So this is perfect lead in, because that's what the hygienists are doing with the scan and all of that.
Yes.
So you talked about the fact finding, right? Mm-hmm. And all of that data being collected before the hygienist calls the dentist. So I'm going to go, I'm trying to go backwards, but I'm not. I'm going to, so that I can keep my brain on track here. All right. So in order to increase the co-diagnosis and increase that hygienist confidence in teeing up non-hygiene treatment, right? So operative, restorative, surgical, whatever it is, whatever that you recommend, is I have found that there are three key things that as dentists, as leaders, they've got to do for their hygienists to get that there. Because a lot of times they complain and say, well, you know, my hygienist just isn't talking about restorative, or I go in and they don't say anything. Like, I have to pull everything out of them. And we tell hygienists, we say, you've got to take control. Yeah. Hygienists should take control of that doctor exam. The hygienist should be running that doctor exam. Because that doctor's just come out of who knows what kind of procedure.
Can I say something chauvinistic? Yes. So, you know, I always tell my hygienist, look, number one, 95, I assume 90 to 95% of all hygienists are female, correct?
Probably you still, know, yes.
Yeah, probably, let's call it even
80%. Yeah.
One thing I know about women is they know how to move men to get what they want or to do what they want them to do, right?
Okay.
So I tell my hygienist, I said, pretend I'm your boyfriend or brother or something and just tell me, just lead me along the way so I don't screw it up, right?
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, I'm just trying to get it out of them.
Okay. So number one is it's very important for dentists to very explicitly give their hygienist permission to think like a dentist.
Right.
So even though
very important.
You've been working with Megan for years, right? Yeah. It's important periodically, and particularly if you, because you guys are always upping your game with different procedures and more complex treatment plans and things like that, to say, hey guys, I want you to know you have my permission to think like me and to talk to the patients this way.
Yeah.
And then the next thing is you've got to educate them. And I know you do that all the time, is educating them to, here's what we're doing, here's why we're doing this. So they have to understand your treatment philosophy.
Yeah.
So we teach it in something super simple. It's just called a case review meeting. Mm-hmm. And we say once a month at least, bring cases to the table to your entire team, not just hygiene. Because you and your dental assistant see
what's in there
all day long.
Like we don't even talk.
Yeah.
Like it's just
because it's all natural, right? It's just becomes that muscle memory of, you know, how what's happening there, and you're not surprised by anything that you see when you open up a big old nasty amalgam or whatever. But the hygienists and the business team, they never see that. So if you can take some photos during that process and say, this is what we see, this is why we're recommending our patients replace these old amalgams, because this is the crap that we see when we take it out.
And have some examples of what we, of pictures of what teeth look like when you have amalgams out.
So take the amalgam out, take a picture before you do any more prepping, and then prep it. Or prep it. They don't really know like what does a crown prep look like? How much of the tooth am we having to take down? I mean, you're taking down a lot of that tooth structure in order to strengthen it. So they've got to know that. So it gives the hygienist confidence because they now understand, okay, all right, so this is what they're seeing. If you see incipient decay, you know, sometimes the hygienist might think, let's just watch it. Do we really need to do something? But then when you open that up and you see where it goes,
how deep it is,
how close it is to the nerve, how sometimes it blows up, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's a little wormhole right to the nerve,
right?
They need to see that so they're not questioning what you're recommending and so that they can speak with experience and confidence.
To the patient.
To the patient of, here's what I see. Doctor's going to come in and confirm this, right? They're not making the final diagnosis, but they know enough to educate the patient.
That's all legal mumbo jumbo, by the way.
It is, exactly. Yeah. So, give them permission. And don't think that they just know that you want them to do that. Right. You have to tell them.
Yeah, because, so we just hired a new hygienist, and she was like mouse quiet in the beginning. And, I told her what we were like and how it worked. And so I reminded her, I said, hey, I just want you to know, she goes, I'm so not used to that. I was told to be quiet.
Yeah.
You know, and so sometimes we have to untrain. That's why it's so important to give permission. Yep.
Yeah, give them permission. Then build that knowledge base, get them super aligned with your treatment philosophy. And the last thing is then hold them accountable and tell them you're going
That's the hard part.
Most
dentists struggle with that.
They do because they don't want to, it doesn't have to be a mean thing, but you've got to set the expectation for the hygienist. So here's the deal, is you have the scanner. So when I come in to do the exam, I expect for those intraoral photos to be taken and the scan to be done. And so if it's not, then I'm assuming you didn't finish the hygiene exam and I'll have to come back.
Right. All it takes is a few times of doing that and it's done.
I mean, you know, I worked with Chris Bowman for 9 years and he would say, you know what, go ahead and take that photo and I'll come back. And I'm like,
why didn't I just take it to begin with?
Right. So it just took a couple times and then I knew I do not call him until I have the photos ready.
Yeah. You know, I think, so just to review, it's giving hygienists permission. Okay. Educating them. Yep. And I want to make a comment on that. And then the third thing is the accountability. And the accountability is where most dentists struggle. You know, I listen, at least in my head, what often goes through, well, God, hygienists are hard to find. I don't want to rock the boat. I don't want to go, I don't want to deal with the pain of losing a hygienist and all of that stuff. But at some point, you have to be true to your practice and true to yourself and just have to hold people accountable. Mm-hmm. And what I have found more often than not is people want to be held accountable because most good people want to improve. And accountability isn't about being mean, as you said.
Right.
You know, accountability is about making mention, hey, you know, we're making good progress on these iTero scans. I noticed last month you had 20 new patients and we only took 10 of these mm-hmm. scans. You know, what would it take to get to the next mm-hmm. step? So there's nothing mean about that, right?
No, and it might be something like, well, the scanner is at the opposite end of the hall.
Well, what they told me is they didn't like the tips I was using because my tips were fogging up, so they wanted me to get different tips for it.
And you wouldn't have known that had you not brought
that
up.
No, so I said, okay, so you're talking about $50 a month?
Yeah.
And this will get rid of this problem? Like, okay, just right. buy 100 of them.
Right.
Let's move on, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. So sometimes it's something like that, or we a lot of times find out that the hygienist didn't know that they could ask for equipment, like new mm-hmm. ultrasonic tips and things like that, because maybe one time 6 months ago,
I said no.
Somebody said, you know what, we got to really buckle down on the budget or whatever. Yeah. Well, I can't ask for anything. Well, but the dentist is buying burrs, mm-hmm. so you've got to have the instruments to do what you need to do. And if you're doing a lot during your appointment, you need to be using your ultrasonics.
Yeah. Well, you should be using your ultrasonics more than scalers.
Absolutely. 100%. That's a big thing that we believe in, is our ultrasonics should be our primary scaling tool.
Yeah, we'll make it easier.
Absolutely. So back to that co-diagnosis is, so that's where the hygienist can really take responsibility for mm-hmm. that wait time, is calling the doctor early, getting all that data early, mm-hmm. and then making it easy for the doctor to come in and do the exam, because right. you're more likely to break away to do an exam if you know it's going to be easy and they're going to have everything teed up, than if you're going to have to go in and start that whole conversation from scratch.
I hate it.
Right?
I hate it when I have to do that.
Right.
You know, I think overall, and we'll move on to the next topic, is I think if any dentist or any hygienist or any assistant or any team member listening, if you will figure out what it takes to make your practice life easier for your owner, you will become irreplaceable.
Yeah.
And when you become irreplaceable, you can grow, you can earn, you can get time off, you can, I don't want to say you can call the shots, but you can have conversations mm-hmm. because you've earned that right mm-hmm. to have it. And to mm-hmm. me, it's listen, just make my life easy mm-hmm. and we'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know, so that's good. Yep. All right. So we've talked about the co-diagnosis. Now let's talk about the last topic for today. Probably a very difficult topic to talk about for most people, and a topic that many dentists probably don't like mm-hmm. other people talking about. And that's hygiene compensation mm-hmm. models. So talk to me about that. What's mm-hmm. what's the latest and greatest, I hate to say that, but
well,
on hygiene comp?
So I'm going to make two disclaimers. Yeah. So one is, I'm not a CPA, right? Okay. And I don't have the P&Ls of every person listening right now. So you have to make decisions based on what's right for your practice. And there are pros and cons to every single compensation
Absolutely.
Model. Okay.
There's no right. There's no perfect one.
No, there's
not. It just
not.
Doesn't exist.
There's not. And as far as latest and greatest, I don't know. You know, I'm not usually an early adopter. I'm kind of the steady,
right.
the steady one. So I don't know that there's anything flashy that I could tell you. But we see everything. We see. So I'll just kind of throw out some things that okay. we see, and some of the things that work with it, and some that don't. And then I'll tell you what we have seen work the best. So obviously, you have everything from, you know, straight hourly and there's mm-hmm. no incentive, to full commission, you know, they're mm-hmm. making a percentage of whatever their net production. Mm-hmm. Okay. Just make sure everybody heard
Adjusted,
that.
Basically.
Yeah. Net production. Cause you can't pay on what you can't collect.
I can't pay you on my fake fees.
Right.
I got to pay you on my MetLife fees.
That's right.
Yeah.
So that's tricky, and that mm-hmm. needs to be laid out. So whatever mm-hmm. comp plan you're looking at, you've got to do the math for your team and show them, here's the potential, you know, here's the upside.
You got to have agreements in place.
You do. So if you're moving more to a commission-based, and again, there's everything.
And are you seeing that more and more?
We are seeing that more and more.
Because I don't want to say I'm anti it, but I've been resistant it. So I'm personally very keenly interested in understanding how and why this works.
Yeah. So yes, we are seeing that. I think that people like to have some control over, or feel like they have some control over their income in some way that they can influence that.
Right.
If you are moving to something, what we see works a lot, what we typically recommend most of the time is some type of base pay that, and then once the hygienist gets to that 3-to-1 profitability point, so they are producing 3 times the compensation, then they get a percentage of the overage.
Okay.
Now,
and the base pay isn't like a normal pay.
Right, it's typically a little bit lower than what the going rate is in your area.
Okay. Because they can't have the cake and eat it too, right?
Right.
Okay.
And you want to get as close to that 3-to-1 as you can. Now, so let me finish that train of thought. So they're making a percentage of whatever's over. If you have a team bonus, and this takes some math, but if you have a team bonus, I encourage you to not remove the hygienist from the team bonus.
Wow. Okay.
Because then it just it tends to become all about what's happening on the hygiene schedule.
So they become like this little division.
Yeah, and they're separated.
Yeah.
And you want them to be co-diagnosing. You want them to be teeing up treatment so they can benefit from how the whole practice does, right?
Right.
There are so many like theories around all of this. Is some people say, well, you should be bonusing each individual in the practice differently. I mean, I don't know how you keep up with that.
Sounds complicated to me.
And a team bonus, you're always going to have some people on the team that are slackers or, you know, but you can deal with that in other ways.
You got to vote them off the island.
Right. You can deal with that in other ways. We have seen one big practice in Texas. They had all the hygienists. It was a commission pool.
Oh, wow.
So they all made the same
like
percentage. They made the same percentage based on what the whole hygiene department produced.
That's not a terrible idea.
Yeah, and it worked for them. Mm-hmm. And when a new hygienist came in, they would pay them hourly for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And then the hygienists that were in the pool would decide whether or not that hygienist gets to join. Oh, so they would also be responsible for kind of mentoring and training that hygienist into someone that can, you know, recommend treatment and all of that kind of thing. So that's kind of interesting. So whatever that percentage is, I just encourage you to think about what the team bonus can be and factor that into.
How important do you think these compensation talks are between dentists and hygienists for us to get closer in alignment of where we want to get the practice to?
I think, like you said, if you want to run a modern dental practice, I think they're very important. Because otherwise, a lot of times you have team members who just expect to get a raise every year, no matter how well the practice is doing. And sometimes that's going to be to your benefit, right, as the owner. And sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's going to be a really tense situation because maybe you don't feel like they have earned that raise, you know, with their participation and their willingness to grow. Sometimes from a profitability standpoint, they're pricing themselves out because of your reimbursement level.
Right. And which
isn't going up. And while that's not, it's not the hygienist, they can't control what plans that you take.
But it's a reality of the business.
But it is a reality of the business that we're in.
Right.
And if those plans are creating busyness and work for that hygienist, then you kind of have to look at the pros and cons of theirs. Like, well, you may not have a job here if we didn't accept XYZ plans because we wouldn't have that patient flow. And that's a tough conversation to have, but I think it's important for them to understand that there are certain things in the business that are just a given.
You know, the tact I've always taken is I try to meet with people individually every week, not like a scheduled meeting, but we have our standing rule in the office that I want to sit down with everybody for 2 minutes, 3 minutes, just in passing every week, everybody at least once, just to shoot what's going on, okay?
Yeah.
How's their life is, how that stuff is. And every once in a while, I'll bring in, like, I'll use Megan, for example. I'll say, Megan, so tell me, what is your goal 5 years from now?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what kind of income do you want to have? And it can't be a lot. You know, you got to give me some specifics, right? You can't just say more, you know? So give me some specifics. Mm-hmm. And the reason I ask, Megan, is I want to devise a plan because I value you. Okay, but there are realities of the business, and I want to devise a plan that can help us get there. Okay, and knowing where you want to get to is the first step of being able to devise that plan. And it's amazing to me what some people say. Some people say they don't want to make any more money, they just want more time off.
Mm-hmm.
Some people say, you know what, I just want some other instruments. You know, some people will say, hey, you know, I need to make this. And you can head it off in the past of people leaving because you're not giving them
what they need.
Yeah, or they're more afraid to ask you than mm-hmm. you are to ask them. Mm-hmm. That's what I believe.
So I would say having that expectation too that you're going to meet with them so that when you say, hey, can you hang out for a couple minutes at the end of the day, they don't feel like they're in trouble. Right. Yeah. So you've set that expectation. I will tell you that is exponentially more than most dentists meet with their team because nobody likes to do reviews.
Yeah.
But when you're doing it every week or even once a month, then
weekly.
It doesn't have to become this big like thing where we're going to talk about my performance. So do you do anything more formally at other times of the year?
I'm the HR nightmare of dentistry. Okay.
All right, we won't get into
in
that.
Every way possible. Okay. Look, I'm forced to do 90-day reviews, and they're okay. You know, I'm not the best at them.
You mean when a new team member starts or for everybody?
A new team member starts.
Okay.
And then I don't do reviews anymore because, honestly, I am sitting down with my team members all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, all the time. And you know, another tip on this, the rule is I don't initiate the sitting down. The team members come.
Okay.
And I tell them I'm busy. And, you know, oftentimes team members will say, oh, he's busy. And all I'm doing is looking at my computer.
Uh-huh.
Right. I'm not really busy.
Yeah.
Right. So I say, listen, just come in the room, sit down. You know, if you got a few minutes, you know, you'll sit there for 30 seconds. And I'll probably notice that you're here. And I'm like, hey, Rachel, what's up? You got something on your mind? What do you want? What's mm-hmm. going on? And then we'll just have this organic conversation. And what I typically try to do is 60-70% of the time it's nothing really like very pinpointed. Mm-hmm. And then a few times we'll have a conversation about, hey, I want to focus on this. Now, when a new hire comes on, it's probably the opposite. It's mm-hmm. probably 60-70% of the time we're focusing on progressing mm-hmm. and a little bit about their personal mm-hmm. life.
Okay. So these weekly meetings, mm-hmm. they're initiating that.
That's correct. I hate to call them meetings because meetings sounds like
just
you schedule
check
them.
In. Yeah. We're just having a check in and you set the expectation that you want them to come to you once a week.
Yeah, there's no formal thing here, but I would say, hey Rachel, listen, people I work best with, people that last the longest, that do the best here, we have a tendency to sit down once a week that we know each other. You know what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. I know what's going on in your life because I treat everybody like family and mm-hmm. I want to know what's going on. Mm-hmm. So do me a favor. If I slip my mind, there's 10 of you in my practice. So if I tried to schedule time, it never happened. Anytime you see me, anytime you got a few minutes, regardless of what I'm doing, you come in and say, is now a good time?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's when you're free, not when I'm free. Mm-hmm. And we try to set that expectation. Mm-hmm. And it takes people, what I've noticed is it takes, some people go to it right away. Mm-hmm. And some people, it's so unique and different.
It is.
That they're like, wait, this sounds horrible. Mm-hmm. You know, or they have that fear. Mm-hmm. And they slowly warm up and mm-hmm. it just happens.
So one of the things that we found too with commission is you've got to be really clear on what your expectations are with regards to what's okay and what's not okay to get to whatever their goal is. Because they're going to set a goal, right? They're going to say, whether they tell you or not, they're going to have a specific goal that they want to get to.
Or they're going to have their refrigerator break and they need a little bit, you know, life happens, right?
Right. So you've got to set some expectations on how you expect the schedule to run. Like, we're not going to be shortening appointments for you to pack in more patients.
So we can't break the culture of the practice.
Right. We cannot break the culture of the practice to fit this compensation model. So
we can't steal from others.
No, we can't steal from others. So whatever your core values are, you got to make sure your team knows them and everything needs to be aligned with that. We worked with a team a long time ago, fantastic hygiene team. Like they just made it happen. Right. And one gal was really motivated with the commission piece. And so she just packed her schedule full, a lot of patients, like 40, 45 minutes. Ugh. And then what I discovered was she wasn't doing her clinical notes. So there would be days where there were no clinical notes.
Oh my God.
That was a condition of her participating in the team bonus or her commission was this is part of the deliverable for your work. This is what's expected. And you have to have the treatment notes done at the end of the day. When you saw that patient, you can't leave until those notes are complete. So if you don't have time in your appointments, then you might need to lengthen your appointments a little bit and see if you fewer patients.
Yeah. That makes sense.
So I would encourage everyone, if you're going to that model, just to have some very clear written expectations that you sign and they sign, like, this is how this is going to roll. And then from there, we're adults and, you know, we need to be able to talk about it.
You know, last thing on this is too often I see dentists, they'll go to a seminar, they'll go to something and they're like, oh, that's a great idea. And they'll just go back and put it into their practice and they don't think
all
through.
All business owners do that.
They don't think through the agreements. How does, if I give this to you, how does it affect somebody else?
The domino effects.
What about my assistants, front office people? Mm-hmm. You know, all of these things. Mm-hmm. So I'm always a believer that you take what somebody else says because that works in their culture, in their environment. What works for me probably doesn't work for many other people. So you got to take it and you got to understand, does that fit your culture? And then you have an action plan of implementing it.
And here's the thing too, it doesn't matter what business you're in, like with things like compensation, I mean, we've experienced this in Inspired Hygiene. There are things that are going to come up that you didn't expect. Mm-hmm. You can't predict every way that this method is going to influence behavior. Right, positive or on the negative. You can't predict everything that's going to happen. So the counter to that is, you're right, everything's not going to fit your culture, but if we overanalyze it, then we will do nothing.
Right.
So sometimes you have to say to your team, hey, we're going to implement this, and we probably are going to tweak it.
Yeah, we're going to experiment.
Right, we're going to implement this, we're going to experiment, and we're probably going to need to tweak it, so just expect that. But my intent is for this to be good for you, good for the practice, good for the patients.
Yeah, absolutely. So Rachel, so how can dentists get in touch with you? And you talked today a lot about when you go into offices and at your seminars and stuff. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so we have phenomenal coaches that work with Inspired Hygiene. They're all hygienists. They're all very experienced just in private practice.
And they've all been trained by you.
Yeah, and they've all been trained by me. Okay. And we all work very closely together. And have a very common framework. So they go into practices every week and are boots on the ground in there observing and really working and customizing our teachings for the practice, right? Okay. So you have a culture and you have beliefs and a treatment philosophy around perio. And someone else has one that's a little bit different.
Right.
So we're always there to kind of stretch you, or else why would you hire us, right? But at the same time,
it's the whole point of a coach.
Right. But at the same time, we want to honor the culture of the practice, assuming that it's a positive one, right? Yeah. So we want to honor that. So that's kind of what we do. We're still kind of classic, you know, coaches that show up at your office, and we focus on hygiene.
You focus on hygiene.
Yes.
Okay. So I want to be clear about this, because when I think of hygiene coaching, and this is my bad, so I know other people are thinking this, I always think of perio only.
Yeah.
But it's so much more. The hygiene department is so much more than perio.
It is so much more. And that's still
In
often
fact, it's 80% more than perio.
That is still most of what we get the request for is either they have a plan in place, but it's not, it's kind of like fallen by the wayside over the years, or they have no plan in place. And now there's a big awareness around this, right? With the oral systemic link and all of that, it's like, okay, we have to be diagnosing some perio at least. No, not everybody in our practice is 100% healthy. So we still get a huge request for that. But yes, there's so much more from communication between the hygienist and the rest of the team, the doctor, how they hand off, how do we say this to the patient so that the patient is interested in what we're recommending, right? So it's just case presentation, verbal skills, getting everybody on the same page. You know, you can have multiple hygienists and everyone's doing it differently.
Right.
And that's really hard for a dentist when they know every time I walk into each of these different hygiene ops, I'm getting a different handoff. The hygienists have talked about different things because they have a favorite thing that they want to talk about. It's like, you guys, we got to get all on the same page.
Or as close as we can to it.
Yeah, as close as we can. We want everyone to have their own personality. So we're not creating Stepford Wife hygienists, but they're all speaking the same language, and that the patients could move between hygienists.
Right. And they have the same treatment.
Yes. Yeah, and have experience. That continuity of care.
Yeah.
And also so that the team understands, like, what all is hygiene doing to help support the practice?
They're just eating bonbons in the back.
Right, right. Reading magazines, right? So we want to undo that kind of stereotype.
Rachel, we just aged ourselves. Nobody reads magazines anymore.
I know. They're on their phone.
They're on their phones doing
people.
It. So it's inspiredhygiene.com. Yeah. Rachel Wall, she's been fantastic. We've done seminars together. We've been in the office.
We need to do that again.
And we need to do it again, man. Anytime you want.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll make it happen.
Okay.
So if you want to get in touch with Rachel, inspiredhygiene.com, any and all your hygiene needs. They are a fantastic group.
Thank you.
Wonderful people that get it. And that's what's most important.
Thanks.
Rachel, thanks for being on.
Yeah, always. Thank you for having me. I enjoy it.
Absolutely.